This Philly Emerging Tech interview is sponsored by Heroku. Deploy and scale powerful applications on the rock-solid Ruby platform in the cloud. For more information, visit Heroku.com. Chariot TechCast, episode number 63. An interview with Davis Frank on the Jasmine JavaScript testing framework. Davis Frank is an agile software engineer who created and contributes to the open source Jasmine JavaScript testing framework. He created the project to help him test applications for the former Palm, now HP WebOS mobile application platform, which is actually written in native JavaScript. Pivotal has a number of projects related to Jasmine on GitHub, including the port of Jasmine to the HP WebOS framework, which he also created. In this podcast, we discuss how JavaScript is just plain different than other languages in a way, the challenges of testing a browser-based project, and how Jasmine works. We'll also get into some discussions of some of their other related projects and some good sample test code. Davis will be giving a practical Jasmine talk at the Emerging Technologies show next week, and so if you want to get a leg up on the framework before attending the talk, this is a good start. Well, Davis Frank, welcome to the Chariot TechCast.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. We're going to talk today about Jasmine, but before we get into it, let's talk about, you know, a little bit about who you are, what your background is, and how you got into doing this project.
Sure. I'm a software engineer and engineering manager at Pivotal Labs. We're a software consulting firm doing mostly web work, mostly Ruby on Rails, though we also have a burgeoning, as most consulting shops do, I'm sure, mobile group,
yeah,
which is where I've been spending most of my time the last couple of years. And we're known as being an agile shop. So we believe in test-driven development and pair programming and continuous integration and rapid deployment, those kinds of things. So Jasmine came out of, which we'll come back to, came out of the need or the desire to have a sort of more fresh JavaScript testing framework a couple of years ago. I've been with Pivotal about 3 years or so now, and I mentioned I've been doing mobile things, but the genesis of the Jasmine project was moving from doing Rails full-time, which I'd been doing for about a year at Pivotal and a couple of years prior to Pivotal at another company, was coming to at the time, late 08, early 09, new, the now HP WebOS platform, and which is a JavaScript, the native environment, if you're not writing games or low level stuff, is a JavaScript inside a WebKit environment, needing to test drive applications on WebOS, and none of the existing JS test frameworks, a couple of which were actually developed by people at Pivotal, JS Unit and Screw Unit, where it would work on WebOS because they've sort of assumed a web development environment. You know, you're writing a server backend that's pushing HTML down to a browser client, and there's a request and response cycle. None of those things is present on WebOS. It's much more sort of HTML5-y. You know, your page gets loaded and you make AJAX calls for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of a slightly different situation where these older test frameworks didn't work. And so we had to start with something new. And so we did. And that was where Jasmine came from. It has a syntax which is heavily inspired by RStack. We believe in BDD, you know, describe blocks, it blocks, nested calls to set up your test environment, those kinds of things. We basically just sort of took those ideas and started kind of from scratch in a pure, what if you were going to write a JS test framework with no dependence on any other frameworks, no dependence on DOM, no dependence on the request response cycle that most web applications have. And that's where Jasmine started. And it was great for our WebOS development practice. As people worked on people here at Pivotal, sort of, you know, we switch around a lot on different projects. So when the people who were working on WebOS rotated back to Rails projects, they're like, they've made it very clear that they wanted to keep working in Jasmine and not be working with ScrewUnit or JS Unit. And so we decided, I guess we have to make this a real project.
That's great.
And so then we, you know, do all those things you do to sort of get out of, you know, zero dot whatever open source project.
And with GitHub and everything else, it's so easy to get something out there now today and get it going.
Oh, yeah. It's, boy, love those guys.
Yeah.
I was at CodeConf last weekend here in San Francisco, and I got to give a quick little lightning talk on Jasmine. And, yeah, boy, where would we be if we didn't have GitHub?
Seriously, I think it's really accelerated the open source curve. I mean, everything's happening so much faster now.
Oh, yeah. And it's the feedback loop, in which we love. I mean, that's one of the things we preach all the time here. But getting a feedback loop with the people actually using your project is awesome.
It's fantastic.
In fact, it's too fast. I don't get to pull requests fast enough, and I apologize.
Well, I guess one of the things before we even get into Jasmine itself, let's step back a little bit and talk about JavaScript as a language, right? I mean, you know, I've talked about this a couple times in the TechCast and the dev news that we do here, you know, that, you know, if you haven't read Crockford's JavaScript, The Good Parts, and you start programming in JavaScript, you may become very confused by the language. It's not truly like a Java or even a Ruby. It's a whole different animal, isn't it?
Yes and no. And I say that with complete ability of hindsight. the story I like to tell, which I think is what you're pointing out, you know, I started working in Rails in 2006, 2007, kind of early on. And JavaScript was intimidating, right? There were all these things in Rails to take so that you didn't have to worry about JavaScript. And of course, I'd heard about JavaScript. I knew what, you know, things were, but it was, you know, Ajax is taking off, and wow, this made Ajax easy if I'm a Ruby developer and I'm thinking only as a back-end person. But it was intimidating. I didn't understand it. I mean, braces and semicolons aside, right, which is what a lot of people freak, especially coming from Ruby where you don't have to worry about those things. So I was afraid of JavaScript, frankly, and I was working at a company where we had JavaScript devs who wouldn't touch the back end. It was, I'm much more of the strong generalist view now, where it's helpful to know the whole stack. But, you know, we had the front end developers who did all the CSS and JS, and I was one of the Ruby developers that did all the back end, quote unquote, right? That's kind of weird. But I really didn't understand JavaScript at all. And it wasn't until I got here to Pivotal and I got on a project where I was working with somebody who was a crazy JavaScript guy. He totally understood JS upside down. And we had to write the best for the client. The work that we were doing that week was the absolute best credit card validation form as you as a user will ever use in your entire life. It was the Bentley, like, Continental of credit card validation forms. And it all had to be in JS. You know, talking about to a Rails app. And wow, after 2 or 3 days, I'm like, oh.
Now you know why.
Now I get why, you know, and it started out, oh, this is, everything's a hash, right? Okay, I get that now with JavaScript, right? And then, and oh, but I have constructors. And I made it all the way to the point of we didn't get heavily into closure-y stuff, lowercase c, you know, dealing with JavaScript closures and scopes.
Anonymous functions and things, yeah, right.
Right, exactly. We didn't get that hardcore. This was 2008. It was still, Rails was still very prototype-y. jQuery hadn't really taken over yet.
Right.
But it wasn't until that week where I'm like, oh, this is what everybody's talking about. And then 7 or 8 months later, I'm doing JavaScript full-time, and I kind of haven't stopped. So yeah, you come at it, if you come at it along that path, right, where, okay, JavaScript is this thing that we all wrote these one-line click handlers, or like we were like animating buttons and things. Or, oh, I'm using, you know, within a web framework, I do these magic things in order to allow a button click on the other end to make an Ajax call. And you don't spend time with the language as a language, as a programming language, things like anonymous functions being passed around, setting a property on a function, that one still blows people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Friends of mine who don't do JavaScript development, but I tell them, oh yeah, you can just go set a property on a function. And they're like, what? not to mention the things that really hurt your head, like, oh wow, like nested closures and and how stack frames are represented, and all that really low-level-y stuff of what's kind of really going on. Yeah, it can be really, really intimidating. And I think it wasn't, frankly, until I read The Good Parts, until I got it. And when I say that, if anybody out there actually hasn't read this book, this is an O'Reilly book. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
It is maybe 180 pages. Am I overstating that?
No, I think you're right. And it's a very slow 180 pages because
I
there's so
think,
much good in it that you really
oh,
want
well,
to seep it in, you know?
oh, totally. It's like per like value of O'Reilly dollar, which we as geeks have all spent in terms of number of pages, you're like, oh, why am I spending that? And then, yeah, then you realize that you've read the chapter on inheritance, oh, five times. And it's got to be the most, I don't know what, how to, maybe we could come up with a most times a page was read metric.
It's got to be huge, yeah.
It's got to be huge for that book. It's awesome.
I agree.
And of course, like anything, it becomes dogma, and then you sort of start to veer away from it a little bit as you're more comfortable in the language. But
Sure.
as far as treating JS as a language, I think if you're going to treat, say, somebody gives you a oh, I've got this project that's kind of HTML5-y, or maybe you're doing a client project and they say, I want you to do in Sencha or something, even with a heavy framework, I would say read that book first and stay away from the Rhino O'Reilly 900-page JavaScript book, which I've maybe looked at five times in my life. That information is all in Google and you can find it. But The Good Parts is a fantastic read if you're going to be doing any heavy JavaScript development.
I just found it made me start to understand what the heck the
It's
scripts were
1
doing,
o'clock.
and you have
Sorry
one of
about
those
that.
too.
Yeah, hold on. Let me turn that off.
My roommate here, we do a lot of training, and both of us are sharing the same office, and he has one of those clock announcements, so
Yeah.
know it
You know
well.
what's even better is when you're in the middle of sitting in the audience in a talk and you listening to somebody else's talk, and then you didn't realize that you'd cranked it up because you were listening to something on your headphones in the coffee break, and then it announces in the middle of your talk. That's a good one. I recommend that if you ever need to, you haven't had a good blush in a while, that's a good
Yeah.
one.
Well, I like to torture my sons, but at one point I had a Mac Mini as a media server at home, and I SSH'd into it and I did the say command on them, and they weren't, no one was in the house. It's like, I'm watching you, Drew. Free time.
Oh, you're the best parent ever, Ken.
That's what my plan is, to just torture them until they finally leave. I got four of them. I got to push them out somehow.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about, JavaScript in general. Now, as you're saying, you're doing a lot of programming. Is the stuff in the HP OS, the web OS, is it more server-side event handling and things like that? Or is it like the browser? You said it was the browser AJAX calls back to a server. Is that pretty much how that was programmed?
Well, it's a little bit. Imagine the way to think of an application on for Palm is you are a web page that has been loaded in a WebKit window, and so you know you're in WebKit. There is a framework that you can call for, doing things like showing buttons and doing input with the user and writing text and whatnot. And then anything that's an API call, say to get the device's location or query the database or anything like that, is an AJAX call. So maybe the right way to think about it is you have this sort of top-level script tag on a web page that's like your old good old main in a C program, and all your JavaScript has gotten loaded at once, or a whole bunch of JavaScript, like way more than you would load on a page in a web app. Or a heavy server-side web app. And basically, all of your JS lives within the context of this. Well, sorry, all of your app is in JavaScript in the context of that window. But you can do things like create other windows and communicate via HTTP calls, essentially, to other applications. And when you can just as easily call the Twitter API, and leave the phone, or find out that you don't have service, so you can't actually make that call. Or find out that the user has, I guess location's a bad example, but say, something in the database changed because something synced down, a task or a memo or an email or something synced down. Like you could get an AJAX callback into your app when things like that happened, and then, change the UI to the user.
So then enter Jasmine. So you wanted to be able to test these things and do a behavior-driven test. So talk a little bit about how you approached developing Jasmine and how a user that's doing maybe a Sentia Touch app or an app like the WebOS applications might use it. Because one of the things I was looking at and thinking about is, okay, now I've got this concept of writing behavior-driven tests. How do I interact with a widget or how do I interact with, and do I, you know, how do you approach and how do you write tests in Jasmine?
That's a good way to come at this. I'd say that you should be able to write a test in Jasmine that interacts with any of the objects or functions or even DOM that you're, if you're talking about, Jasmine doesn't care whether you've got DOM involved or not, I guess is one,
right.
one thing. I mentioned at the beginning that, you know, we don't have a dependence on DOM. And so, you know, if you think about it, say that your atomic thing is an object with methods on it, or, you know, properties, a JavaScript object that has properties, and one of those properties is a function, and you want to test what that function does when handed different parameters. Jasmine allows you to, you know, create one of those objects and make calls and then assert on the return values just the way you would with any language or any of the XUnit style test frameworks or the BDD frameworks. And, you know, you can quite literally, you know, the syntax is, you know, expect blah to do blah, right? You know, expect, you know, the return value of 3 + 4 to equal 7, right? Or to not equal 7 or something like that.
Right.
So the beauty of it, and I say this because this is a small enough problem that I was able to actually pull it off when I originally wrote it. Certainly didn't think I was capable of writing a test framework when I started this. Was, you know, what do we need to do? Well, what is a test framework? A test framework is just some code that runs some preconditions, sets some preconditions, execute some code, and then some kind of assertion system to find out whether the values are what you think they should be, or that something got called, a function got called, or something like that. So if you really break it down to that really small set of steps, that's all Jasmine is doing is sort of answering sort of a slightly orthogonal question to what you asked. But Jasmine's describes and befores and afters and its, all those functions were just, when that code is loaded, which is going to be loaded into whatever JS interpreter, right? We have a little runner that's a web page that can load all that, loads all your source code and for your app or for the code under test, and then all your test code. And when that test code executes, the first pass is basically, when all the files are loaded, you're making a call to Jasmine functions, describe or it or before, mm-hmm. and that's building up a gigantic tree of functions in memory. And then once everything's loaded, we have a code that just executes that tree of functions, building up all the results.
Okay.
So it's kind of simple from that perspective.
Right. It's like a DSL to build your tree of processing.
Right. That's really the right way to think about it. And maybe, you know, if you don't do a lot of test code, you don't necessarily see it that way, but that's really, you can really reduce it to that, no matter what your test framework is.
True.
It could be JUnit, it could be RSpec, you know, pick your NUnit if you're writing .NET stuff. I mean, that's really what's going on is
right.
You're just saying, hey, I'm building up a whole bunch of functions. Hey, test framework, go execute them. And you're telling the test framework, here, go execute this code. The framework then will, because of what you've told the framework, you're telling it, hey, when the color of this, this thing isn't blue, I want to know about it because clearly I wrote something that broke because it should be blue. And we just, with Jasmine, we're just reducing it down that far. So there's no DOM involved. We're not expecting jQuery or prototype or backbone or, you know, pick your framework of the week. We're having this JS explosion right now.
Yeah.
We just don't depend on any of that. So in general, we Jasmine should work kind of anywhere
And you could
that
do,
JS works.
right, you could do either, I guess, true unit test with isolation and mocking, or just run against the environment, I guess, too, right? Do integration tests, I suppose.
Right. It's funny. So you can totally do the Unity thing, or the unit testing thing. And that's how I tend to look at it. Because, you can create these objects and assert their behavior, right? Give them inputs, see that the outputs are right, even build up more integration-y in the sense of you can have a bunch of these different objects that are meant to work together, and you can load them all and have them all interact. We have a test doubling system, so you can do some mocking around the periphery of what you're trying to test. But then a lot of people, and this is how a lot of people use it in the web environment versus, say, WebOS where I am, or maybe Sencha, or if you're doing Node programming, because Jasmine works perfectly fine with Node.js.
On the server side, right?
Yeah, you could set up DOM fixtures, so you could actually set up DOM if you wanted, and then test your interaction with the DOM. So it's a way to do some of your, well, to the extent that integration testing in a web application means JavaScript interacting with DOM on a page, Jasmine can be used for that. And a lot of people do. A lot of my coworkers do. I try not to do that. It opens up this very large and complicated testing world debate, because you get the mockists on one side of the world, which said, oh, you can mock, any given thing should be, tested completely in isolation and mocked from the entire world. And if you do that, then you can sometimes wind up in a situation where, the outside world has changed, and if your mocks don't keep up, then you have tests that are failing or passing incorrectly.
Yeah, especially with a complex interaction.
Right, it gets really, really tough.
Where you think you know it, you mock it, and you're totally wrong.
Right, exactly. Or
Or
it was right
slightly wrong.
yesterday,
Yeah.
right? It was right yesterday, and today it's wrong, right?
Right,
Because
right.
the world changed. So it can be done. Jasmine can be used for that, and a lot of people use it very successfully that way, where they're taking DOM fixtures, and by that I mean, here's the DOM that gets put on a page. Let me put it on Jasmine's page, which is the test environment, and then let me execute some code and run a test and see the right thing happens. And now clear out that section of the DOM for the next test, and go to the next one and the next one and the next one. That's all well and good, provided you can have the infrastructure in place that DOM is correct, because usually you're, or not usually, that DOM can get out of sync with the rest of your environment. And that's just one of those
Yeah.
things where you be careful with it. But a lot of people like it. My answer when I talk to those people is, are you writing your code in such a way that you could test it without DOM? Because if you do, it's faster. Then relying on a page reload and a whole bunch of DOM manipulation, and then some test execution. And I can I, the two examples I give is that we were there was a time last year where there were two projects both using Jasmine next to each other. One had I think it was 70 or 80 very integration-y Jasmine specs for the JavaScript on their project, and those 70 or 80 specs would run in about 3 minutes. And the project next door, like literally like one IKEA table over here, had 2,700 specs that ran in about 7 seconds. So those are two extremes. The
Sure.
real world is probably somewhere in the middle. But I think that if we go back to, sort of your history with the language is learning how it works. I think if you encapsulate your behavior that you're trying to build in objects and don't necessarily assume that they have to interact with DOM, they're often a little easier to test. And then you can write another layer of tests that says, okay, I wired this object up properly to the elements on my page. And that can lead to a situation where it's easier to refactor tests later. But that's a, I could, there could be 2 hours of discussion, usually over beer would be better, about all that.
Yeah, about test approaches. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So Jasmine, in terms of the components that are there, so you, Jasmine will create your testing engine, your testing suite, so to speak, a starting one, and you can run it either as a server or kind of like a continuous integration engine. I guess I'm looking at, once it's installed, I mean, what kinds of applications use this the most? You mentioned about, you know, running on Node.js. I mean, are there a lot of people doing it on Rails? I mean, is that a big segment of the people that are kicking around Jasmine?
I would say just because it's come from Pivotal and we're known as a bit of a leader in the Rails space. I guess I can say that doesn't sound too ego fueled, but
that's okay.
And so I know that it's used a lot in Rails environments. Mm-hmm. So I would say that that's probably number one. However, there are definitely some people, there are a lot of people on the Jasmine mailing list that use it in all sorts of crazy other environments. I think, I hope I'm not completely misspeaking, but I think a large section of the MooTools framework is now tested with Jasmine.
Oh, cool.
I don't know, you know, that doesn't need to be around Rails. That's pretty, you know, agnostic.
Yeah.
From there. So that's one project I'd like to tout of saying, hey, look, Jasmine isn't just for Rails and it isn't just for WebOS work. The Node guys, I know are, some of them are using it. You know, we're about to fix the whole Jasmine official, there'll be a more official Jasmine, Node, package, soon if we haven't actually gotten up there already. But you know, what I always say is Jasmine will pretty much run anywhere that JavaScript will run.
Right.
You know, before Node was around, there were four or five different people, including some of my coworkers, attempting to get Jasmine specs to run consistently inside of one of the other command line V8, right, which is the JavaScript engine under Chrome that
right.
Node is based on, or Node uses, I guess, for its interpreter. It's the right way to think about it. You know, deal with command line V8. So I can, hey, let me go test my JavaScript over here in this headless environment. So I think, though we're not currently testing under IE, I know that Jasmine will run in IE. Whether the DOM things that, you know, that since we're not DOM independent, we just need a good, you know, ECMAScript compliant interpreter to run in. We're not doing anything wacky inside the core code. So anywhere JS runs, Jasmine should be able to run.
Speaking of my Java people out here, there is on the site itself, there's a section that says where, you know, the different runners that are available. And so there's a GitHub project for doing it even under Maven.
Yes, so, that's my buddy, good old buddy C. Searles.
Very yep. cool. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, he does a good job of keeping the Maven stuff up to date when we change when we roll out. I really should let him know a little ahead of time, but he's entirely too fast, so he keeps the Java people happy.
And so, in terms of learning Jasmine, I mean, there's a user's guide online, and you have a who's using Jasmine list. Are there particular projects you'd like to point people to that would give them a good idea on how to write good Jasmine-based tests?
Well, so the first thing I would look at is in the package itself. So to get totally under the hood here for a second,
yep.
there's a reporter API that we wrote. It's basically just callbacks to say, hey, a spec is done. Hey, a suite is done. Hey, the whole test suite is now done. And we wrote in there's an object called the trivial reporter, and there's now also a trivial console reporter for the Node stuff. But these objects get instantiated and connected to the Jasmine environment to listen for the test results.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe those are fairly well in the Jasmine repo itself. Those are fairly well tested. The Jasmine gut code is tested. Since we use Jasmine to test Jasmine, it took a while to get there, but we got there by 1.0.
Very cool. Yeah.
And that will make your head hurt. but if, you know, it's a sign of credibility. If you write a test framework and it can't test itself, then you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, really.
Or you need to do it a little bit differently. is probably the right way to say it. So we got to the point where Jasmine was actually self-tested. So the Jasmine specs themselves are really hard to read because they don't look like the code that you would actually write in an application. Mm-hmm. As far as another, I would say that those console reporters are probably the simplest thing because they also they deal a little bit with DOM, and most people are going to come to Jasmine probably dealing with DOM stuff. So I would, without playing favorites or having a really good tutorial project out there yet, which I will take full blame for, I think that code in the repo is probably a good place to start. Because those objects do so little, and you can see how, oh, I instantiate this object and I call this function with some parameters, and then, you know, some things should happen. And I think that those are probably as good a place as any to get started.
Hey, you know, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and, you know, please get on the mailing list. People are really good about jumping on the mailing list and saying, oh, hey, I tried this and it didn't quite work as I expected. And that's a great place for us to find holes in the docs. Which totally need to get better. I'll rant about that after the show and flail myself. There was a great, if folks haven't looked at especially if you're working on open source project, there was a great talk from CodeConf last week. And I think the Lanyard site will have the slides about how you should make your documentation better. And all I did was take notes about all the things I'm doing wrong out of that. So I'm hoping for our upcoming releases that we start making that stuff a little bit better.
Sweet. Just FYI for people who are listening along, if you're in front of your computer, here's all you have to do. Just do git clone https github.com/pivotal/jasmine gives you the repo, and then you just go ahead and open up under the spec suites trivial console reporter spec. And I'm looking at it now. It's very easy to look through.
Great.
Makes a lot of sense to me. That's great. No, good. That's what I was trying to do is figure out, like, how would you use it against the DOM? How would you use it against different pieces? And that's great to see some of these right there in the source itself. So
yeah, well, hope so. That's, I mean, tests when done well are specs, tests, whatever. That's way better documentation than comments and code, for at least.
But absolutely,
something that has an API. I know that there's some work to be done there to make that a little easier for newbies to come.
All right, so you're going to come out and speak at ETE, I see. You're going to give an overview of Jasmine in the flesh?
I'm going to give a fly through. So I have a standard Jasmine intro that I've done 3 or 4 times in the last year, and mm-hmm. it's gotten a little stale. I'm just tired of giving it. And I think people are coming a little more informed. So now I was talking to the ETE folks about what I should talk about. It was much more of a, you know, what would be the next talk you would give, mm-hmm. Which was good and challenging. So I called it, and it's up on the site. It's called, or at least the title is, called Practical Jasmine. So I am going to fly through, you know, normally my normal sort of standard. You know, you get 45 to 50 minutes usually at these things, and I get through my slides in about a half an hour, and, you know, left enough time for a lot of Q&A, because all you have to do is say that you're a testing person, and it just takes that one guy that doesn't believe in unit testing who couldn't get into the other presentation and so comes to yours
and drags you all the way down. Yeah,
exactly.
Hey, guys, don't do that.
You can buy me beer, and right. I will happily have that discussion with you. Because as I told you before we got started, Ken, I'm not going to have a hard time talking.
Yeah, that's all right. You made my job easy today so far. So.
Okay, great. So instead, I'm going to do a much quicker fly through and probably only about a dozen slides mm-hmm. of the syntax, and hopefully kind of like a little bit like what we talked at the beginning here. Hey, it'll look a little bit, you know, this is what a test looks like, and here's how you make a Here are the core features of the framework and what it does and why. The next set of stuff is sort of tips and tricks, things that I keep saying I'm going to blog about to try to get people up to the next level and help out the people that are really, really into Jasmine. Things like how do you do proper test setup across your whole environment instead of just in one spec. You know, what in the Rails world you would call us, or the RSpec world in Rails you'd call a spec helper. Mm-hmm. There's a project called Jasmine Ajax, Jasmine-Ajax under the Pivotal repo for mocking Ajax calls.
Oh, cool.
You know, the last thing you want is to have the Twitter server be up when you're...
Yeah, right.
That's
really nice. That's very cool. Okay.
Yeah. We had some code sort of banding about here that we've been using for years, and we just made it very Jasmine-y. And what's up there now works with the prototype XHR wrappers, the jQuery 1.4. I still have to pull in a fix for 1.5 because Ajax changed a bit in jQuery 1.5, but we have a patch for that now. And so I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Jasmine has a feature for asynchronous specs, and we don't really document it well because it was something we wrote originally because we needed it, and then we determined that we didn't need it, and then it now with Node.js and asynchronous stuff sort of becoming all part of this next leveling up with JavaScript, I'm going to talk a little bit about how to use, when I think you should use those features of Jasmine, which boils down to the best time to use it is when you're implementing an asynchronous interface, not when you're interacting with an asynchronous interface. Mm-hmm. If you're interacting with an asynchronous interface, I recommend, you know, mocking that. And Ajax, of course, is a good example of that. But if you've got your own asynchronous thing that you're trying to test, and you don't want to bake it into sync, you know, you need to test it when it's asynchronous. That's when I think it should be used. We have a mock clock that we've never really talked a whole lot about. So that if you're dealing with testing timeouts and intervals and things, you know, you can queue up a whole bunch of work and then tick the clock forward. Say, okay, go forward 500 milliseconds. Now I expect some things to have happened.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So it's sort of that, here are all these, you know, practical things that Jasmine can do shared example groups. That's the hard one. I haven't figured out how I'm going to write those slides, which is why I didn't turn in my slides yesterday at the deadline.
you're not the only one, I hate to say.
I'm sure I'm not, but I wanted to go ahead and say it out to the world that the reason my slides aren't in.
Mine aren't either, don't feel bad.
Okay, good.
I'm going to be dying now because they're going to kill me for that, yeah.
These are all things that you might either accidentally stumble on, or you might find it as an example in like we were looking at a second ago in Jasmine's own code of, you know, what is that and what is it? Oh, look how much easier that makes my testing life, right? Because that's what you do after you write a test framework, is you suddenly realize that you wrote something, you know, in a few days that gets you over the next hump, but there's always, you know, what's the next thing? And I think there are a lot of core or features of Jasmine core. Some of them, like the mock clock was something that you just needed to be core. The Ajax one, not everybody has Ajax calls in their JavaScript. Most people do. Mm-hmm. That's a standalone project because of that, but it was something that you'd use a lot. And then the shared example groups comes out of, oh, hey, this might just work. And it turns out you can always write a function and execute it in JavaScript. And if you do it and that has, that function executes Jasmine's describe and it inside of it, then, oh, wow, look, you've replicated, you know, you've factored your test in a nice clean way. That's not something we've ever documented because I mentioned stack frames earlier, like talking about stack frames, in a blog post is kind of hard. It's like, you almost need a whiteboard. So I'm going to try to knock that out at the talk. But that's what I'm going to talk about, is a fast overview for people that haven't played with it at all. Just so that everybody is sort of synced on the syntax. And then, you know, here are, I think, five or six simple things that you can use out of the box with Jasmine pretty quickly that can help you with sort of that next wave of, you know, robustness of your test. Features that hopefully you either didn't know about or didn't understand when you looked at them.
All right, fantastic. So you're speaking on Thursday the 28th, according to the schedule here, in the afternoon, 2:45. So for anybody who wants to see how to test JavaScript in or out of a web container, on a server, on a client, anywhere you can do it, in any of your platforms, take a look at Davis Frank's talk.
Yeah, please come. I think I don't know. Did I get stuck? I don't have the schedule up in front of me. Am I either before or after a coffee break? That's always, I always get the ones before the coffee break.
Yeah.
I'm hoping I got a better slot than that. So come caffeinated.
All right. Well, Davis Frank, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ken. No, it's been a lot of fun.
Thanks again to Davis Frank for talking with Jasmine today on the show. Remember, hit the show notes page at techcast.chariotsolutions.com to get links for resources to the Jasmine GitHub account. This ETE podcast was sponsored by Heroku. Deploy and scale powerful applications on the rock-solid Ruby platform in the cloud. For more information, visit Heroku.com. If you're looking for training in the Spring Framework, Maven, Grails, Hibernate, or even Ruby on Rails, Chariot Solutions can help. We're an authorized VMware and Sonatype training center, and soon we'll be offering training on Ruby on Rails as well. Visit us on the web at chariotsolutions.com/education. Our podcast themes are free theme number 3 and 4 from podcastthemes.com. Leave us feedback. Our Twitter account is at TechCast, and you can email us at techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com. For the Chariot TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.